Island Noir Beyond the Palm Trees explores themes of violence, abuse, murder, and sexual assault. Listener discretion is advised for potentially triggering content. Welcome to Island Noir Beyond the Palm Trees, the podcast that delves deep into the most compelling true crime cases, with a focus that extends beyond the headlines to the stories of victims of color around the globe. I'm your host, Soul, and together we will navigate the complexities of these cases, shedding light on the often overlooked narratives and seeking justice. Today, we're exploring a pivotal case from the UK, the tragic story of Stephen Lawrence, an 18-year-old aspiring architect whose life was cut short in a racially motivated attack in 1993. Stephen's death sparked national outcry. Join me as I unravel the events of that fateful night, the failures of the investigators, and the enduring legacy of Stephen's story. We will dive into the details, examine the impact, and honor the memory of a life lost too soon. Stay with me as we seek justice and understanding in Island Noir Beyond the Palm Trees. Stephen Lawrence was born on September 13, 1974, to Jamaican parents Neville and Doreen Lawrence in Plumstead, Southeast London. Alongside his siblings Stuart and Georgina, Stephen grew up in a nurturing environment, his life a tapestry of dreams, talents, and aspirations. A gifted athlete, he competed with the Cambridge Harriers Athletics Club, channeling his energy and determination into every race. But Stephen's passions weren't confined to the track. With a keen mind for mathematics and art, he envisioned a future where he could shape the world as an architect. His academic journey took him to Blackheath Bluecoat School and Woolwich College, where he delved into technology, physics, and the nuances of English language and literature. His teacher, Bob Henderson, remembers Stephen as a courteous and enthusiastic student. Stephen's dreams were big, his potential limitless, aiming to leave a positive imprint on his community. On the night of April 22, 1993, the unimaginable happened. Stephen's journey, filled with promise and hope, was abruptly halted. It was a day like any other, with Stephen attending school, engaging in the routine of a typical teenager. The afternoon found him in Lewisham, casually browsing through the shops. A simple pleasure in the hustle of daily life. As the day edged into the evening, Stephen made his way to Plumstead to visit an uncle, a journey familiar. There, his friend Dwayne Brooks met up with him, and together they immersed themselves in the world of computer games, a shared pastime that marked many years of friendship. However, as nightfall approached, it was time to head home. Their initial bus ride pointed towards a late return, prompting a decision to switch buses at Wellhall Road in Elphin, Southeast London. It was a decision made without any thought, a simple logistical choice aimed at getting home sooner. At around 10:30 p.m., with the night air settling in, Stephen crossed the road, his eyes peeled for the headlights of their next bus, unaware of the tragic turn the night was about to take. As Stephen scanned the darkening horizon for the approaching bus, Dwayne noticed a group of six white teenagers across the street. As the clock neared 10:38 p.m., Dwayne reached out to Stephen, inquiring if he could see their bus down the road. It appears their conversation caught the attention of one of the teenagers across the street, who responded by shouting hateful slurs. This provocation was the spark for the group, who then swiftly crossed the road towards Stephen and Dwayne. This verbal assault by the white teenager was the precursor to a physical attack that unfolded with terrifying speed. The group surrounded Stephen and Dwayne before unleashing a barrage of violence. Dwayne Brooks managed to escape, but Stephen was not so fortunate. He was struck viciously with a bat and then stabbed with a 10-inch wound to his neck. The knife severed arteries and pierced his lung. In the chaos, Brooks and Lawrence made a desperate bid for safety, running from their attackers with the little strength Stephen had left. Despite the severity of his injuries, Stephen managed to run over 100 yards, a testament to his physical resilience and will to survive. But as his energy decreased, he collapsed. The aftermath of the attack was a stark contrast of human reactions. While Dwayne frantically tried to flag down passing cars for help, only to be ignored, it was a white couple, Mr. and Mrs. Taft, who stopped to offer assistance. They were soon joined by an off-duty police officer who, despite not administering first aid, covered Stephen with a blanket and confirmed that help was underway. In those final moments, Louise Taft offered a tender message of love in the face of cruelty, gently placing her hand on Stephen's head and whispering a heartfelt assurance into his ear. The ambulance arrived at 11:05 p.m., but the grim reality was that Stephen Lawrence had already succumbed to his injuries. The medical team confirmed that given the nature and severity of his wounds, first aid would not have saved him. This night, which began with two friends simply trying to get home, ended in a tragedy that would resonate across the nation, highlighting the deep-seated racial divisions and sparking a call for justice and change. In the wake of Stephen Lawrence's tragic murder, where compassion and cruelty intersected on the streets of Eltham, the focus shifted to the pursuit of justice for Stephen Lawrence. As the community reeled from the shock and the Lawrence family grappled with this unimaginable loss, the investigation into Stephen's murder commenced. The response and actions, or rather the inactions of law enforcement, came under intense scrutiny. Despite the severity of Stephen's injuries, first aid was not administered by the officers at the scene. A decision later backed by medical professionals who believed it wouldn't have altered the tragic outcome. However, what unfolded in the immediate aftermath and the days following raised serious concerns about the investigation's handling. Dwayne Brooks, Stephen's friend and a key witness to the horrific attack, found himself not in the role of a victim, but rather treated with suspicion by the very people meant to seek justice for his friend. No official record or log was maintained to capture the critical details of what Dwayne Brooks and other witnesses observed on that fateful night. This oversight in the investigation's foundational hours would cast a long shadow over the pursuit of justice for Stephen Lawrence. From the beginning, Stephen Lawrence's parents felt let down by the police. At the hospital, an inspector insensitively suggested they identify a body without knowing if it was their son, saying, "If it's not your son, then oh well and good, but we need to know." Later interactions didn't improve, with officers providing little information about the investigation, instead probing into Stephen's background, implying he might have incited the attack. This approach not only deepened the family's pain, but also hinted at the police's reluctance to acknowledge the racial motive behind Stephen's murder, revealing a profound disconnect and lack of empathy in their handling of the case. Moreover, the investigative steps that one might expect in such a grave matter were absent. House-to-house searches in the vicinity where the attackers were last seen, dismissed by officers on the ground who deemed it too inappropriate to disturb the neighborhood so late at night. This lack of urgency, a troubling theme, permeated the investigation's initial stages. But it wasn't for a lack of leads. In the 2 days following Stephen's murder, detectives were flooded with 39 tip-offs. The community stepped forward, providing names and pointing towards a local gang known for their racist attacks and history of knife violence. Jamie Acourt, Neil Acourt, David Norris, Gary Dobson, and Luke Knight were named as main suspects, with David Norris having been implicated in a stabbing incident just a month before Stephen's death. This series of oversights, delays, and missteps in the investigation into Stephen Lawrence's murder not only hampered the pursuit of justice, but also highlighted deeper issues within the Metropolitan Police Service. The Stephen Lawrence case cast a spotlight on the underlying racial tensions in the area, with Lawrence being one of four Black youths murdered there within 2 years. In a moment on May 6, 1993, Nelson Mandela, then president of the African National Congress, met Stephen's family at a church in South London. Mandela shared reflections on his own journey, emphasizing the ongoing nature of the struggle for justice and freedom. He highlighted that the quest for justice, including for Stephen Lawrence, is a continuous journey, marked by responsibilities and the need to keep moving forward despite challenges. This meeting underscored a stark contrast between the international support shown by Mandela and the perceived indifference from the British government. Doreen Lawrence, Stephen's mother, questioned why a foreign leader's empathy outshone that of her own government. Mandela's visit not only brought significant media attention to Stephen's case, but also injected momentum into the investigation, marking a crucial turning point in the fight for justice. Doreen Lawrence firmly believes that the involvement of Nelson Mandela, a global icon, was pivotal in prompting action from the police. She has stated, "Without that speech and without us meeting him, the arrest would never have been made." This perspective underscores the significant impact of Mandela's support and the attention it brought to Stephen's case, highlighting a turning point in the pursuit of justice initiated by international figures' advocacy. Between May and June 1993, arrests were made. A significant move was made in the investigation into Stephen Lawrence's murder, with the arrest of the Acourt brothers and Gary Dobson. David Norris would surrender to authorities later on. Luke Knight was also taken in custody on June 3rd. However, despite these arrests, the pursuit of justice hit a stumbling block. On July 29, 1993, charges against the suspects were dropped. The Crown Prosecution Service reasoned that there was insufficient evidence from Duane Brooks to move forward with prosecution, leaving Stephen's family and the community grappling with the frustration of an unresolved case. In September 1993, driven by a determination to seek justice for their son, Stephen's parents, Doreen and Neville Lawrence, took the extraordinary step of launching a private prosecution against three suspects: Gary Dobson, Luke Knight, and Neil Acourt, all of whom denied the charges. This bold move brought the case to trial at the Central Criminal Court. But on April 23, 1996, the attempt to secure justice through this route met a disheartening end. The trial judge, the Honorable Mr. Justice Curtis, ruled the identification evidence provided by Duane Brooks as unreliable, leading to the acquittal of the three suspects. At that time, Britain's legal system upheld the principle of double jeopardy, which prohibits an individual from being tried again for the same crime once acquitted. This law seemed to cement the notion that the suspects could never face trial again for Stephen Lawrence's murder, casting a long shadow of despair over the prospects for justice. It wasn't until 2012, years after the original trial and following the significant legal reforms, including the revisions of double jeopardy, that a breakthrough finally happened. This revision allowed for the case to be reopened if new and compelling evidence was presented, paving the way for the prosecution of two of the original suspects for Stephen Lawrence's murder, a long-awaited moment in the fight for justice. In a pivotal moment for this case, Gary Dobson and David Norris were arrested in September 2010, thanks to a fresh examination of forensic evidence coupled with the revision of the double jeopardy law in 2005. This legal revision opened the door for their rearrest, addressing a crucial obstacle that had previously shielded them from retrial for Stephen's murder. To safeguard the integrity of the investigation and to ensure fair trial, reporting restrictions were immediately implemented, keeping these significant developments out of the public eye. The trial of Dobson and Norris commenced in November 2011 at the Old Bailey. presided by Sir Coleman Treacy. The proceedings revealed compelling forensic evidence. Notably, Stephen Lawrence's DNA was discovered on clothing belonging to the defendants, a key factor in the case against him. After over 8 hours of deliberation on January 3, 2012, the jury returned a verdict that marked a monumental step in the long journey for justice. Dobson and Norris were found guilty of Lawrence's murder. The following day, both men were handed life sentences, with Dobson to serve a minimum of 15 years in 2 months, and Norris 14 years in 3 months. Notably, Dobson's sentence did not account for time already spent, ensuring he would fully serve an existing sentence for unrelated drug offenses. This conviction, coming nearly 2 decades after Stephen Lawrence's tragic death, underscored the persistence of his family, supporters, and the broader community in their quest for justice. It also highlighted the profound impact of forensic science and legal reforms in solving cases long thought to be beyond the reach of justice. While Gary Dobson and David Norris faced justice for their roles in the murder of Stephen Lawrence, 3 other suspects, Luke Knight, Neil Acourt, and Jamie Acourt, have not been convicted in relation to the crime. In a twist that adds another layer to the already complex case, a 6th suspect, Matthew White, who was named in relation to Stephen Lawrence's murder, passed away at the age of 50 in 2015. And the year before his death, he admitted guilt in a racially motivated attack on a black shop worker near the location of Stephen Lawrence's murder. This incident chillingly echoed the Lawrence case, with White reportedly using the memory of Stephen Lawrence as a threat, suggesting he could summon associates to target the shop worker, thereby leveraging the infamous murder as a means of intimidation. The Metropolitan Police Service had arrested White in both 2000 and 2013 concerning Lawrence's murder. Forwarding the case to the Crown Prosecution Service in 2005 and again in 2014, despite these developments, the CPS concluded on both occasions that the evidence at hand was insufficient to secure a conviction. This outcome highlights the ongoing challenges in the quest for full accountability in Stephen Lawrence's murder, leaving unanswered questions and a sense of unfinished justice for Lawrence's family and the community. The case continues to highlight the complexities of legal proceedings, especially in crimes where racial motivations and historical context play a significant role in the UK. I'd like to offer my own reflection on Stephen Lawrence's case. It's a story that, despite its roots in a heinous act of violence, has sparked conversations on justice, race, and the power of resilience. The treatment of Dwayne Brooks, a key eyewitness and Stephen's friend, by the police, alongside the Lawrence's family's experience, starkly illustrates the profound failures in the system meant to protect and serve. The initial indifference and subsequent mishandling by the authorities didn't just deny Stephen's loved ones the support they deserved, but it also showed the systemic biases that can undermine the very foundation of trust in law enforcement. And then there's the heart-wrenching reality that several suspects in this case were never convicted, leaving a wound in the fabric of justice that time alone cannot heal. This glaring gap between the crime committed and the accountability enforced speaks volumes to the challenges we still face in prosecuting racially motivated crimes. It begs the question, how many more Stephens must there be before true justice isn't just an ideal, but a given? As your host, I'm left pondering the legacy of Stephen Lawrence's case. It's a reminder of the work still needed to dismantle racism within our institutions. 3 decades after the tragic murder of Stephen Lawrence, his family's resolve in seeking justice and effecting change remains unwavering. Their profound loss has been transformed into a powerful force for social justice, leading to the establishment of the Stephen Lawrence Day Foundation. This organization embodies their vision of creating a more equitable and inclusive society. where the shadows of racial prejudice are dispelled by the light of opportunity and understanding. Dedicated to nurturing the potential of marginalized young people across the UK, the foundation engages in a multi-faceted approach to empowerment. Through mentoring, coaching, and providing valuable work experience, it opens doors that might otherwise remain closed. Educational and training offered by the foundation are pivotal in broadening the horizons of young individuals, allowing them to envision and work towards futures filled with promise. At its core, the Stephen Lawrence Day Foundation aims to equip young people with the necessary tools, knowledge, and qualifications to chase their dreams, irrespective of their background. It stands as a beacon of hope and progress, guiding young minds towards their aspirations and supporting them every step of the way. Through this enduring legacy, Stephen Lawrence's memory continues to inspire positive change in the pursuit of justice, not just for him, but all victims of racist crimes. The legacy of Stephen Lawrence and the tireless efforts of his family to advocate for justice and equality, we are reminded of the work still ahead of us to combat racial injustice and support our community's youngest and most vulnerable members. The Lawrence family's resilience and dedication offer a beacon of hope and a call to action for each of us. To my listeners, let's reflect. How does the fact that several suspects in the Stephen Lawrence case were never convicted impact our understanding of justice and accountability in racially motivated crimes? Thank you for joining me on this deeply impactful journey through the Stephen Lawrence case here at Island Noir Beyond the Palm Trees. I'm your host, Sol, and it's been an honor to explore the nuances of justice, hope, and the relentless pursuit of accountability with you. Follow us on Instagram and Spotify to connect and share your thoughts. Until next time, keep seeking the truth beyond the shadows.